When Three Gun gets big, I'm sure they will play music after they announce your name, like in baseball or UFC fights. What song would you want them to play for you?
We Will Rock You.
Buddy, you're a boy, make a big noise, playing in the street, gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace, kicking your can all over the place, singing,
we will rock you.
Welcome to the Three Gun Show, episode 4. I'm your host, Dave Hartman. On this episode, our featured guest is Team Strongside Tactical member, second runner-up in Auto Division at the 2014 Pikes Peak Shotgun Challenge, and third leg of the tripod that puts on the Weld County Fish and Wildlife Three Gun Matches here in Colorado, Drew Bolt. Before we get into the interview, I want to thank you for downloading and listening to this episode. The Three Gun Show is a weekly podcast dedicated to the fastest growing shooting sport, three gun. Each week, I will be bringing you a new episode featuring an awesome athlete, manufacturer of multi-gun specific products, and sometimes both. If you like the show, please tell a friend, subscribe in iTunes, and leave a review. In fact, I'm running a contest for those that leave a review in iTunes. Be sure to keep listening after the interview for details on the prizes and how to enter. In this interview, Drew and I discuss how to keep a match friendly to new shooters while keeping it highly competitive for your upper level shooters. Drew is right-handed but a left-handed shooter, and we discuss cross dominance and how to set up a cross dominant shooter for success if you can't beat it out of them to begin with. Everything we cover in the interview can be found in the show notes, so if you're at the gym, driving to the gun store as you're listening to this, don't worry about it. Just go and check the show notes next time you're in front of a computer. You can do that at threegunshow.com/episode4. And now, please join me in welcoming Drew Bolt to the show.
Drew, thank you very much for joining me on the Three Gun Show.
Yeah, well, thank you, Dave, for having me.
So, Drew, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself off the range? Who's Drew Bolt when he's not shooting three gun?
Yes, Drew Bolt is a husband, father of two, stepfather of two more, and grandfather of two great boys. I'm also managing director of a company called PCS Ferguson. And we make equipment for natural gas and oil wells, and we sell all across the U.S. and worldwide.
Okay, so that's your day job, and somehow you find time on the weekends to practice, to shoot, to constantly build guns and stuff like that. I always see you posting about it on Facebook. How did you get into three gun?
That's a great question. I always enjoyed watching Shooting USA, and I saw these great shooting competitions that they covered, the Bianchi Cup, and I watched the great one and Parent Butler and Mapper Kit and all these guys just tearing it up, and I always thought, man, that looks like about as much fun as you can have. I grew up hunting mostly with long guns. I felt like I was kind of born with a .22 and a shotgun in my hand. And nice. I've always enjoyed competing, and that show, I think, is what really got me interested.
So you've always enjoyed competing. Did you play like high school sports, stuff like that, or how did you compete when before you came into three gun?
Yes, so something that not a lot of my shooting buddies know, but I spent 15 years racing stock cars. I was crew chief.
Oh, wow.
And we built most of our own cars. We started off with street stocks on the dirt. We won a couple championships. And then we moved to asphalt racing. We ran modifieds, the Pro Truck Series, and we ran some NASCAR Southwest Tour races. We were very successful. We won 10 championships in 15 years. And it's been about 10 years ago now that I retired from racing. I spent 5 years really focusing on my career, and I got the itch to compete again, and was watching, you know, I guess Shooting USA, and decided that that looked like fun. I was ready to, I was at a place in my career where I could spend some extra time doing something besides work. And I jumped into it with both feet. And JJ and Denise Johnson ran a local match. They ran a local match here at our Aurora Gun Club. And one day I kind of just got the bare minimum equipment, used my super Black Eagle 3.5-inch Benelli, and I think I bought a XDM pistol and had built an AR, and I just showed up, and I found out that the shooting community was fabulous, and they were very helpful, and I kind of just jumped in with 2 feet. So the first competition I ever shot of anything was actually a 3-gun match.
Oh man. So it sounds like it, you know, I didn't even know a lot of that, and it sounds, and you know, for those listening at home, we know each other personally. We shoot together all the time, but, I actually have like a very similar background, I guess. Although replaced circle track racing with drag racing, I did a lot of drag racing in college and thereafter, and spent a couple of years, working in that industry. And, you know, somewhere along the line, switched over to guns. It helped the mechanical part of my mind be satisfied. And
right.
My first competition was actually a 3-gun competition as well. Just dove in with both feet.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and yeah, so were you like me and you loaded shotgun shells from your pocket?
I was like you and loaded shotgun shells from my pocket. I had only owned a pistol probably for a month or two, and I took a concealed carry course before I decided that I should go compete. Like I said, I grew up with kind of a shotgun and a 22 in my hand. I grew up in South Central Nebraska. My family had a sand and gravel operation, so I grew around in a rural area, and I got to fish and hunt, and, I completely wore out an old Winchester 22. It doesn't even function anymore. There's so many rounds that's been through it as a kid. And so, that's how I got started. And the whole pistol thing is still my weakest gun for sure. And it takes lots of practice. I have some friends that are masters and grandmasters, and it frustrates me to no end to shoot with those guys, but I learned every day from them.
Yeah. So Drew, when you went out to that first 3-gun match and, you said at Aurora Gun Club, what were your first thoughts there?
Well, first of all, it was very intimidating, right? And I was nervous, and I didn't know, you know, what to do. And I'm a super competitive person, so I wanted to win the first match I went to. I knew that wasn't realistic. And I think I finished somewhere mid pack of that local match, which really gave me a fire to pursue this sport and you know, be the guy that finishes in the top of the local matches. At some point, it took, it's 6 years now for me to be able to do that. And,
talking like 2009 or something like that.
Yeah. I think that was about 2009, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
And that's kind of what brought us here today, I guess. I think this is my sixth year. I was trying to think back of when that was, but that feels about right.
Awesome. So now that you've got all that experience under your belt, what division do you shoot now?
I shoot primarily the tax scope.
Okay.
A couple times a year, I'll bust out the heavy metal gear for He-Man Nationals and maybe a few local matches a year just to have some fun with it. My first, it wasn't my first shotgun, but the shotgun I, spent most of my life shooting was 870 Express. And so I grew up, you know, with a pump shotgun. I was always very proficient with it. After I had shot some three gun, probably for 3 or 4 years, I invested in heavy metal gear so I could shoot that match because, you know, it's at the NRA Whittington Center, which mm-hmm. is just the best place in the world as far as I'm concerned to shoot a match. It's a natural terrain. There's like 50,000 acres that we get to play on, and any excuse to go there and shoot is a good time.
No kidding.
Yeah. And so I enjoy that, but switching back and forth between heavy metal gear and tac scope is a challenge for me because I don't practice very much with the heavy metal gear. And, but I do enjoy breaking it out a few times a year.
Okay, so you primarily shoot tac scope. So tell us about your tac scope rifle setup.
Yeah, so I'm a huge JP Enterprises fan. Right? Everything they build is just fabulous. Mm-hmm. My first few years, that's I shot a JP CTR 02. And it's been a fabulous rifle. Since then, I've acquired a new sponsor, and the upper and lower is a JP VTAC 15, and I've changed barrels, but everything else on it is really JP Enterprises parts. They just work. They got it figured out. They've spent a lot of time figuring out what works for our game, and you know, you can't go wrong there.
Okay, so you made the departure from JP on the barrel. What type of barrel are you running these days?
And so my primary sponsor is a company called Strongside Tactical, and one of their you know, the best products they sell is the Stretch 16. And it has a gas system that's 2 inches longer than a normal carbine, or I think it's called an intermediate gas plate system.
Okay.
And what it does is it makes a 16-inch barrel feel like an 18-inch rifle barrel with a rifle gas system. It's very soft shooting, and it's less weight. And so it's kind of best of both worlds. It's a shorter, lighter, compacter package that shoots as soft as an 18-inch rifle length gas system. And I shot with that all last season, and continue to shoot it this season. It's really a great setup.
Well, that's pretty cool. So it's a 16-inch barrel then?
It is a 16-inch barrel, yeah. And you know, previous to that, I had shot, you know, I owned that rifle before, and it had a 16-inch barrel with a normal carbine-length gas system. And I really dreaded the recoil impulse. It kind of bounced all over. I mean, it was mm-hmm. a fun rifle to shoot, but it was really, for our game of three-gun, it was really hard to have quick follow-up shots because it bounced all over because it was such a lightweight rifle. Once I switched barrels, man, it made all the difference in the world, and it really improved my game last year. I did really well in some major matches at some all rifle stages, you know, finishing in the top few places. I missed winning the stage at the Noveski the Novesky match by, you know, less than a half a second or something. And there were some great pro shooters there, so I was pretty proud of that.
Well, yeah, the competition was pretty stiff that this last year at the Area 2 Multigun Championships presented by Novesky. Long name, that was it. So the other interesting thing, Drew, I guess we should probably tell the folks at home is that you're a lefty shooter, right? So that kind of puts you in the... Okay.
I am a lefty. And so luckily my dad, when I was young, recognized that I was left-eye dominant as his he. So he started me off shooting long guns left-handed. The interest, and so I shoot guns left-handed, I shoot pool left-handed, I shoot archery left-handed, and then I do everything else in my life right-handed.
Really?
Yeah, but anything that to do with vision, because of my left-eye dominant, I shoot left-handed. The first couple of years I shot a pistol, I actually shot it right-handed, and I shot my long guns left-handed. And I found that after a 2 or 3 day match, I was really fatigued. My neck hurt. My vision was weird. I felt like shooting right-handed was really hurting me because I was always cocking my head to one side to use my left eye right-handed. And one day I just decided that I was going to learn to shoot my pistol left-handed. I bought a left-handed holster, and I haven't looked back. Now I try to shoot a pistol right-handed and it feels really awkward. Probably not as awkward as it does for a normal person because I am right-handed, but it is different. And it's mostly because of the vision. Vision is so important in our sport. You can only shoot as fast as you see. So the vision is really everything.
Oh, that's amazing that your dad was like progressive enough to be able to identify that and have you shoot left-handed rather than just try to beat it out of you or cover your eyeball or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I really appreciate that. And, really, in many ways, there's in every match, right? There's stages that favor righties and there's stages that favor lefties.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, they're always biased towards the righties. But in those few matches where a match director may make it really hard on the right-handed shooters, I do really well on those stages.
Yeah. You know, I would agree that they are definitely biased toward the right-handed shooters, although I shoot regularly at a match where it's set up by a left-handed guy. So it's a little bit difficult, that guy being you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I do notice when you do that.
You know, the thing about our match, and that's really one of the things I hope we talk about later, is
absolutely.
That me and Matt Young and Paul Clark Jr. run a 3-gun match locally here at Will County Fish and Wildlife up north of Greeley. And actually, I have very little to do with the stage design.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mostly Matt and Paul, and we try to have a guest stage designer every match because we find that it really, as a match director and somebody that's designing stages all the time, it's hard to come up with fresh ideas. And so we try to have guest stage designers at least one stage every match. I'm kind of the stats guy, the sign-up guy, the money guy. And those guys do most of the stage design. Occasionally I'll design a stage or two. I try not to make it biased towards a lefty or a righty, but, you know, I think that's what happens. And that's why you see so many matches with biased right-hand stages, if you will.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just people's frame of mind at the time, you know, because they're thinking how they would shoot it, not how you know, how a lefty would shoot it or something like that. That's just their only frame of reference.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so I remember there at last Las Vegas Multi-Gun Nationals last year, there was a few stages that were really benefited me. And I did extremely well in those stages because I think they were purposely made it hard for right-handed shooters. And you see that in the major matches. I think they try to balance them pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
They do a good job of that. They've got enough experience at designing stages. But there was a couple stages there where I clearly had an advantage because of being a lefty. So those stick out for me.
Hey, can you think of like a specific example of what made it advantageous for you?
Yeah, there was one stage where there was some offhand rifle for a righty that was probably 125 yards. And it was a pretty difficult shot, but a lefty could actually reach the barricade in the window to get a stable shot platform. And so I probably gained 2 or 3 seconds on that portion of the stage because I had a really stable platform. I could reach the gap, and right, there was no physical way for a righty to reach the same spot. But that's the game, right? You win some, you lose some, and
yeah, no kidding.
There's plenty of stages as a lefty. I'm trying to overcome being a lefty, and it favors the righty, so it balances out.
Yeah, I'm sure. So, Drew, with that left eye on your rifle, what kind of optic are you looking through?
So I run a couple different optics. My favorite is the Swarovski Z6i 1-6 with the BRT reticle. And right after that, I think that I've tried quite a few of them. I really like the Burris products, and I have the new XTR 1-5 Burris.
Oh, okay.
I love that scope. It's on my heavy metal rifle right now. I'm actually building a second 16-inch rifle, and I think I'm going to move that scope to it. I really like that. That is a fabulous optic for the money. And the glass is great. The reticle is great. The Burris is really, to me, they're really coming on strong. They're a local Colorado company. So I kind of like supporting them, but I wouldn't shoot their stuff if it wasn't great, and they got some great stuff.
Well, that's good. So what is it about that the new XTR that you like so much?
I think they did a good job. The glass is clear. The reticle makes sense for our game. It kind of has that donut and some hash marks. I believe it are mils that are, you know, it's easy to know what your holdovers are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's key for our game, right? With, you know,
right.
Depending on the match, you know, there's lots of local matches. We rarely get beyond 200. I run a 200 yard zero almost all the time for all my rifles. It seems to make sense. So when you go to a match like Rocky Mountain 300 or Blue Ridge out in Kentucky, where you might have some, you know, 400, 500, 600 yard shots, those, you know, having a reticle that works with those, that type of distance is key to success there. Otherwise, you could go to war on a 500 or 600 yard rifle target. And just trash your stage.
Yeah, no doubt. So, Drew, what is it about the 200 yard zero that you find works best for you?
So, with the Swarovski, I guess, you know, with their reticle, if you run a 200 yard zero, the ballistics for both a 55 grain kind of full metal jacket. And my other load I shoot is a 77 grain Sierra Match King.
Mm-hmm.
It really works out where the second line below your 200 yard zero is really close to 300. The fourth line is 400. The next line is 500. And then after that, it's like 575. And so it takes all the thinking out of when you're engaging those long targets and remembering what distance they are. It's really easy to, I guess, get your hits because of the way that the reticle matches the ballistics.
That's pretty awesome. It does sound like a very quick way to have it set up where just the next big hash mark is where you're going for that next 100 yards out.
Yeah, and then 100 yard zero, it ends up being kind of like one. The next one is like 220 and 335 and 450, some version like that if you go at the 100 yard zero. And for most of our matches, most of the shooting we do is 200 yards or closer. And so anything that's that for what we shoot at, you don't even worry about it. You just put the red dot on it and you squeeze the trigger carefully and you get a hit. And so it takes all the thinking out of anything between 0 and 200 yards. Well, I should say 40 yards and 200 yards. Anything 40 yards and closer, you want to be conscious that your scope is, a couple inches over your bore, and that you're gonna have to hold high inside of 40 yards to hit where you want to hit. At some matches, that's really critical. I can think of one. The Noveski match. I think there's some close rifle stuff that you need to be conscious of your holdover. And the other one is Superstition Mountain in Phoenix. They routinely have some really close rifle shots, and if you aren't paying attention to your holdovers, you're going to pay the price.
Yeah, that's good advice. So Drew, when one of the first times we shot, or I guess the first time we shot together, I was on your squad, and one of the things I noticed is this guy moves a little faster than I thought he would. Just by sizing him up. And the second would be that he loads a shotgun really fast. Tell us about your shotgun setup. What type of shotgun are you running and how do you load it?
So I told you a little bit earlier when I started shooting, I had a camoed out Benelli 3.5 inch, right? Super Black Eagle. And I bought a Nordic extension for it, and I went and I shot my first 3-gun match. And I would urge everybody out there to go show up, bring whatever you got. Don't be scared and learn about, like, if this is something you want to get into. And that's kind of what I did.
Yeah, I totally agree. My first match, my first bunch of matches, maybe even my first season, I was running a 18-inch Mossberg 500 pump gun, and again, mostly loading from my pocket on that. So,
yeah,
and I had a fantastic time. It wasn't the fastest guy out there, but it was a kick in the pants. Enjoyed myself, and then once I had a few under my belt, I knew what I needed to get from there.
Yep. So, after about 3 or 4 matches, I figured out that at that time, especially that. The Benelli M2 was the gotta have shotgun, right? That was the gun. Mm-hmm. And at that time, Benny Hill, down in, South Texas was the master at customizing a M2 for our game. And so I bought an M2, shipped it to him. He opened up the loading port. He lightened the bolt. He did all the mods. They put the mag tube on it. He put a fiber optic front sight on it. And at that time, that was the top creme de la creme in shotguns for our sport.
Yeah, it was a hot setup.
5 years later, I'm still shooting it, and it's just been rock solid, right? And everything is still compared to the M2.
Yeah,
it seems like the Stoger's making some pretty good headway right now. There's been lots of shotguns come and go, but the Benelli 2, the M2 is still what everybody compares every shotgun that comes out on the market to.
And why do you think that is, Drew? Why do you think the M2 is the benchmark?
I think it's light. It works. It's fairly easy to load. It just does everything it's supposed to do. It's not a gas gun, so it doesn't get dirty and puke on you. So, the number one maintenance thing for an M2 is keeping a fresh magazine tube spring in it. Once that spring gets weak, they develop some feeding problems. I probably change mine. I change it at least once a season, sometimes twice. And if I do that, I just have zero problems. It just runs and runs and runs. So it's been a great shotgun. I have a Nordic extension on it. I have one of the triangle, I think it's a high-vis front sight, if I remember right, that's kind of a triangle.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent it to Trapper, and he actually put a rear sight in it, and for slugs, I really like it. I mean, out to 100 yards now, with the I shoot a couple different slugs, but it's really point of impact, point of aim, all the way out to 100 yards now, and adding that rear sight. Trying to remember the brand of the rear sight, and there's a couple different versions of the guys install, but it really made a difference in my long range slug hits. There's a few matches that we go to that you might be asked to shoot at an 8 or 10 inch plate at 50 to 100 yards, and that's a hard slug target. And adding that rear sight really helps give you a second point of reference. Because you have to have a repeatable cheek weld. And without a rear sight, those 50 to 100 yard slug targets get pretty difficult.
Yeah, no doubt. The rear sight has been huge for me, just adding that one little thing and actually getting my slug targets rather than just, sending, $30 worth of slugs down the range has been nice.
Yeah, I never enjoyed the slug targets, and now I look forward to them because I know I don't even think about it. I just pull up, I get a good sight picture, squeeze the trigger, and before I even hear it hit, I'm already on my next target, and it gives me the confidence to go really fast. I can call my shot, so.
That confidence is important in keeping it moving, too.
Yeah.
So what do you load with? I see you're working on something unconventional, I guess I would say. What's going on for 2015 for you?
Yeah, so I've always used the Carbon Arms, their loading system.
Their twin system.
Yeah, I have their original twin stuff when they were machining them. Now they're molded. They're actually much improved from the version I have, but mine work great. They're really broke in, so I really like them. I actually made something I called Quadzilla this year, and I have like an 18-inch diamond plate, aluminum plate, that I mounted the twin system to so I can quad load off my chest. It holds 32 rounds. It's quite the sight.
Jesus. Yes, it is.
There's no denying that it's a pretty serious piece of equipment, and I'm working on quad loads hard this winter. I've been loading deuces, I guess, and now all the rage is grabbing four and loading four, in two quick motions instead of continuing to go back to your chest to grab two shells. I grab four at a time and then throw them in the shotgun. It's very fast. I've been working on, I've always been a weak hand loader, so I'm working on my strong hand quad loading. It's not going as well as I'd like. I was out practicing the other day and I was doing a strong hand quad load, and I would start with an empty shotgun and there was 12 targets, and I could run through this, my stage, like in 20, I was going around 26 seconds, and I, at the end, I decided to just load it weak hand quad loading, and I dropped 6 seconds off the first time I tried my, I went back to weak hand. So.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. I still have some work to do. Yeah.
For a guy like you that has, you know, sort of like an ambidextrous thing going, how do you decide which is the strong and which is the weak hand for loading?
Well, I think that's why my weak hand loading is so good, because it's actually my right hand that I'm loading with, which is my normal strong side, right?
Mm-hmm. That's your normal writing hand, right?
Exactly. And so I think that's why my weak hand loading is so awesome. That's kind of my strength, I guess, in this sport is shotgun, number one, I think, is my strength. And number two, I'm really good at weak hand loading because it's my naturally strong side. Since I'm left eye dominant but right handed.
So then I got to ask, why are you trying to force the strong hand reload then?
So the advantage of strong hand reloading is the gun is always up in a shooting position and your eyes are up. Versus when you weak hand load, you actually drop the shotgun, you flip it upside down, and you load your shells, and then you have to flip the shotgun over, bring it back up to your shoulder. When you strong hand load, you actually just rotate the shotgun a half a turn, take it up on top of your shoulder, point it down range. Your vision is kind of up. It's kind of like loading a pistol in the zone in front of you up high, right? And they say, you know, pretend right. when you load a pistol, there's this space out in front of you the size of a basketball that you should be doing all your work. And that way you're not raising and lowering your arms, and you have the vision of where your next target is, and you're not – it's the least amount of movement you can do it. It's the same way with shotgun, a strong hand reload. Your gun is up, your eyes are up, and it's the shortest distance from your hand to the shotgun. And so you get on target much faster.
Gotcha.
However, because it's really my left hand doing the loading, which is my normal weak hand, it's pretty awkward for me, and I'm really struggling with it. There's some advantages when you're moving and shooting with a shotgun to strong hand loading. The shotgun is kind of always out in front of you, and there's less chance of breaking the 180 on a lot of stages, and that's the advantage over weak hand loading. There's been a big progression in shotgun loading. Three or four years ago, everybody, the weak hand reloading, keeping the shotgun up, but using your weak hand to load them one at a time. You know, you would grab four out of your loader, and then you would, but without unmounting the shotgun, you would load your magazine tube, right?
Right, just kind of shuffle them in there.
Shuffle them in there. The guys that are good at that, you know, the Keith Garcias, the Millers, right? Those guys are legendary for their fast weak hand reloads. Daniel Horner, it's really hard to beat because they're not moving that shotgun up and down, right? They're just throwing shells in. That was the fastest way. And then, you know, loading deuces or two at a time became the thing. And now there's quad loading. And even Keith Garcia, Daniel Horner, I'm pretty sure Kurt Miller's still holding out. He's still the weekend master, and he's not changing. Yeah. But the quads is really fast. I mean, the guys that are doing it well are 4.2 seconds shot to shot loading eight shells, which is just insanity, right?
That's, yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. My prediction is every stage there is for the future of shotgun loading, right? Every stage there is one method that's going to be faster than the other. And the best, the guys that win that stage are going to be able to change their, how they load their shotgun on a stage dependent basis, right? It might be weak hand load. It might be strong hand load. It might be old school weak hand load, like, you know, like I was talking about before. The best three gun shotgun shooters are going to know how to do all of it, and they're going to do it well.
Interesting. So it's just going to be whatever tool for the proper, you know, the proper stage, and grab
exactly.
from the toolbox and let
exactly.
it rip.
Exactly. Right. It's like MMA, right?
Yeah.
When MMA started, you could be a boxer and win. You could be a wrestler and win. You could be a jiu-jitsu guy and win. That's not the case anymore. You better be a black belt in all three, or you're not going to win. And that's kind of like shotgun loading is today.
That's interesting. That's an interesting observation, and I'm sure you're right. It's going to be interesting to see what comes, you know, down the pipe from all the advancements in shotguns. Hell, maybe someone's going to be loading six pretty soon here. You need bigger hands than me, that's for sure. But
yeah, I'm struggling with four, but you might be right.
Yeah. So Drew, let's switch gears up just a little bit here and tell us about your pistol that rounds out your three gun setup.
Yep. So my pistol is pretty awesome. It's a Infinity SCI 6-inch.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, it was 40 caliber. It has a removable breech face. So over the winter, I sent it to Brandon, that SCI, and he made me a 9mm barrel, and now I can convert it back and forth. It can be a 9mm or a 40.
So no, that's way cool.
Yeah, so for the USPSA pistol matches, if I want to shoot major, I can convert it to a 40. It probably takes 10 minutes. And for the three-gun game, where there is no power factor requirements, and the advantage is to shoot 9mm with less recoil and a 23-round magazine versus a 20 or 21-round in 40, you get those few extra shells. It's pretty awesome. Plus, for practice, it's a lot cheaper to shoot 9mm.
Yeah, no kidding.
And it's got a super aggressive grip on it. It's I don't know if you've ever seen them, but it has this machine grip that feels like a file on your hand. And if I actually shoot it for a couple days in a row, my hand literally gets bloody.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, because the grip is so aggressive. But it really helps manage the recoil and have fast second shots. And I need all the pistol help I can get. So
yeah.
I like the 6-inch because it gives you that extra inch of sight radius. And I'm finding that three-gun pistol targets are becoming harder and harder, right? There's a lot of 50-yard pistol-type shots.
Farther and farther out there, definitely.
Yeah, and having that 6-inch gun, I really enjoy. My GM pistol buddy laughs at me. I got to do everything I can to even stay within like 20% of him. So
right, is that Paul?
Yeah, that's Paul.
Yeah, he's an animal on the pistol. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. So it's pretty sweet. So I have a pistol that can be 9mm 40, takes 10 minutes to convert, and it's a beautiful piece of art, really, that I look at all my gear as a tool. It's a really awesome tool. it's also a really expensive tool.
Yeah, I can tell you like it.
But it's really fun to shoot. So
Drew, you were talking a little bit earlier about learning the quad load over the winter here, the winter break from Three Gun, as we've been cold and snowed in Colorado for just the last couple of weeks, actually. But how else do you structure your practice? How do you balance it between live and dry fire? And what kind of stuff do you work on?
Yeah, so I've been this year. I've been very busy at work and haven't practiced like I should be. I've got a Superstition Mountain here in about 3 weeks. And so my plan is to dry fire my pistol and rifle every night. My basement, I have a lot of pictures on the wall. And so I start from either low ready or port arms. And I use my shot timer set apart time. And I just practice coming out of position and quickly getting on sight and squeezing the trigger, right? I'll set three or four or five targets up in the basement. I'll do splits. I'll do mag changes with both pistol and rifle. We don't do that many mag changes with rifle. As far as dry fire practice, and then I'll load Quadzilla up three or four times a night, and I'll practice strong hand weekend until my hands get sore, I get bored, which doesn't take long.
Especially with 32 rounds.
Yeah, exactly. It becomes kind of a chore, right? Which is nice because my shotgun will hold 12. But I usually practice with 8. And so nice thing about Quadzilla is I can do 4 rounds of 8 without picking up all the shells off the floor. So
that's awesome.
I'll do that. And then, when I go to the range, I try to practice at least one day a weekend at the range. And we'll do things as hard as possible. Right? We'll start with a 1 or 2 shells in a shotgun. Shoot one, now there's one in your chamber, and then load the rest of whatever you need and moving and shooting. And a lot of getting in and out of positions, it's usually not the shooting that helps you. I mean, you have to be a good shot. But shooting fast is maybe one of the least important things that we do, and it's probably the hardest thing for me anyway. Shoot slow, see the sights, and do everything else fast, right? Your movement between shooting, your transitions between shooting, your reloads, your picking the rifle up, picking the shotgun up, getting on target. Do everything fast, but shoot. Shoot slow and do everything else as fast as you can. And that's really the key, right?
And so you work a lot on transitions. Then when you do that, do you do that in your dry fire as well?
I do that in my dry fire. Mark had some pretty tedious, Mark Pasimanek, who puts on the Noveski match, had some pretty standard stages. And
yes, he did.
It really opened my eyes to, picking up a rifle or starting at low ready, engaging 6 targets at, 50 yards, headshots, and you had 6 seconds to pick it up. I think it was a port arm start.
Yep.
And you had 6 seconds to do 5 headshots. Is that right?
I think it was 5 targets.
Yep.
I tried to block that one out of my head, Drew, because I didn't do near as well as I had wanted to on it. So,
yeah.
Like a traumatic experience I'm trying to forget.
And so I really, like that drill alone, I practice in my backyard almost every day for a month before that match.
Oh, that's awesome.
It made a huge difference. And I played around with my grip. And you know where I ended up fastest was when I gripped with my weak hand on my rifle, that my index finger was pointing, just like that you learn in baseball, right? Point where you want the ball to go. And if I use my index finger on my hand guard, whether it's my rifle or my shotgun, and you get that index finger pointing at your target, your eyes go where your finger points. And it's, I found that to be true on that drill. If I held, it made a half a second difference on that drill on how I gripped the forearm of my rifle. It really improved my game by practicing that.
Wow, that's amazing. And that's a huge difference and good advice. And it totally makes sense. I mean, we see monkeys point at stuff and, you know, we as humans are always pointing at things. So that totally makes sense.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you practice a drill specifically for the Noveski match. Is that how you break down your practice? You look at what match you have coming up and see what sort of shots might be there and try to practice those specific things?
Well, I do if they publish the stages before the match, but I don't know of any other match that does that besides Mark.
Oh, is that right? Well, you know, it's probably because it's a USPSA deal, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure. But usually it's hard to, you know, when you have a standard stage, it's something that you can sure practice for.
Right.
Even the other stages that aren't, even when they publish them, it's hard to get looking at a stage design and really know how it's going to be when you actually get there that day. But the standards, like he's kind of famous for now, are very are very easily set up and practiced for. And
yeah, for sure.
So for most matches, you don't really know what you're getting into. If you can find that out, I absolutely try to simulate that. I remember last year for Superstition Mountain, they had this chair that went sideways, and they strapped you in with a 5-point harness, and then you sat in there and they gave you your rifle, and then they either tilted the chair to 3 o'clock or 9 o'clock, and you had to shoot the stage sideways.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was crazy. So I actually practiced shooting sideways at different distances because they kind of gave us a sneak peek of the chair. And I have to say, though, I struggled with that stage. It didn't help me very much. So, but
so how did you practice that? Did you just lie on a table or something like that?
Yeah. And, you know, I did. I lied sideways left and right and played around with what I didn't do was distance makes a matter. The distance makes a difference. It's back to what I said. About 40 or 50 yards with an AR, if you have a 200-yard zero or even a 100-yard zero, you can put the dot right on it, and you're going to get your hit.
Right.
That's kind of the intersection point. Closer than that, you have to be, your dot is going to be 2 inches higher than where your bullet impacts, or 2 inches left if your dot was on the right, or 2 inches right if your dot was on the left.
Yeah.
And I was kind of so freaked out about being in the chair, I didn't consider the distance I was shooting at, which was about 50 yards. All I had to do was put my dot on the heads and squeeze the trigger, and I would have been good. But I was trying to hold off, and I getting some mics or some misses. So, you know, learning experience. I won't do that again.
Yeah, no kidding.
I just hate learning at major matches.
Yeah, that's really the worst time to learn, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
So, Drew, what is the area of your game you feel like you need to work on the most?
For sure, pistol. You know, I'm when I was shooting pistol a lot, I could hang with the kind of the A-class shooters. There's a lot of three-gun guys that are masters and grandmasters that are taking on three-gun now. And
yeah,
those guys are incredible. And pistol by far is my weakest link. I typically finish in the top few percent, I guess, with my shotgun. Major matches, there's been a lot of shotgun stages where I've finished in the top 10 or 12 shooters for the whole match, for every you know, group except for open. With my rifle, I tend to hold my own with my rifle. I shoot my rifle pretty well. Nowhere near a Daniel Horner, but near
you
the,
are.
Oh yeah, I'm, you know, near the, I would say top 10 or 15%. But when it comes to pistol, I'm usually, you know, 25th percentile or something. So
the pistol needs some work.
It does need some work, and it's probably the one I enjoy shooting the least. And I'm not a super athletic guy. I'm not that explosive guy. Like, you know, the great pistol shooters, for the most part, have this really explosive speed. They're just unbelievable athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not me. I'm not that guy.
Built for comfort, not for speed.
That's right.
So Drew, do you have anything outside of actually shooting that you do to prepare for matches? You know, speaking on that topic there, is that something you're working on, is explosion?
You know, the one thing I struggle with the most in my life is probably eating and lack of exercise, right? You're kind of my role model, because you do all this CrossFit and Tough Mudder, and if I was that guy, I'd be a much better shooter than I am, right? and something I really struggle with, and I wish I was that guy, but I'm not. I practice. There's not much outside of three gun that I do that I think helps me with our sport, like, you know, like some kind of physical activity. That's probably if I did that, that'd probably improve my game more than anything else I could do.
Yeah. The I was trying to break it down the other day and try to design like a, sort of a fitness regimen for three gunners. And, most I came up with was like burpees and wind sprints, and then I stopped right there and said, "F it." That doesn't sound like any fun at all.
Yeah, I think I've seen some stuff out there, right? I think moving left, moving right, moving and stopping. I thought about building like a fake rifle that was like 55 pounds or something.
Oh, that's an awesome idea.
Like cast it, like get a mold of a shotgun or a rifle and make it out of lead or something. And you could practice like getting in position and holding it and, repeat some of the movements that we use. And if you used like a really heavy fake weapon, I got to believe that would help you when you went to your really light weapon, right?
Oh, for sure.
Those muscles that you use, but you don't use them for very long. If you did that with a lot of weight, I think that would help. But I've never took the time to build my fake heavy gun. But that was my idea.
Yeah, that is a great idea. I think it does have some merit to it. So Drew, switching up gears again here, you know, we kind of teased it earlier, but you, you do help run a pretty awesome three gun match at the Weld County Range. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that match?
Yeah, so there's we try to do it about 8 months out of the year. It's the fourth Saturday of every month. The stages are usually very difficult because I guess of the three guys putting it on, we like hard stages. We spend a lot of time building the stages. It takes some extra time setting up and tearing down. But I think we present stages like you'll see in a lot of major matches. It's not a real simple, easy stage. There's some merit to really simple, easy stages because they can be very challenging too. But we tend to make kind of hard, grueling stages with lots of props and technically difficult. That's kind of, I think, the signature of our match. We worked really hard last year on getting new shooters introduced to the sport. Women introduced to the sport, children introduced to the sport. We're all very passionate about that. The more people we can get into the shooting sports, the safer we are as a nation and to uphold our Second Amendment rights, right? So our goal is to get everybody out and shooting and enjoying the shooting sports and
absolutely, and I totally behind that. I absolutely love that idea, and I definitely noticed a lot of new shooters every single match. This last year, I guess 2014 at Weld County, how are you getting those people to come out? How are you guys spreading the word?
Well, I think a lot of it's been word of mouth. I think we're going to do some more kind of social media stuff, but you know, one of the things we did, we started letting, your first match, you shoot free and new shooters shoot free. Hopefully they enjoyed it enough that they'll come back. And so we try to make it economical for the first time shooter. I think we worked hard on having new shooters briefings, and we pair new shooters up with squads and somebody else, and I think everybody goes out of their way to help new shooters feel welcome. And we were all that guy at one time, right? So we talk a lot about,
for sure,
you know, don't be scared, and you know, all of us will let our, you know, we'll, you want to use our gear, right? We'll share gear. We'll do whatever it takes to get you to come back. And we just try to make it a safe, fun environment. It's a balance because our stages are so hard. A lot of the new shooters end up timing out. And I think we've discouraged maybe some because it was pretty hard and they see the guys, the veteran guys that have been doing it 5 or 6 or more years kind of rock it, and then they're timing out, and I think they get discouraged. But I think we do everything we can to say, you know, that we were just like you when we started, right? So don't be discouraged.
Oh yeah.
And if you enjoy it, come back. And we I guess we just try to be as welcoming as we can, and we ask people to spread the word.
I absolutely love that too. It's one of the things that struck me the most about the shooting sports is, you know, coming from like an automotive racing type thing, there's a bunch of dicks in that type of thing, and people are so secretive about everything and not willing to help you. And I found the absolute opposite in three gun. Guys will let you, you know, like you said, shoot their gear. I saw you, you know, lend a rifle and optics sent up to a guy that costs more than my truck and, you know, without even blinking about it. And with just a, hey, don't dump this too hard. And, you know, it's great to see.
Yeah. His rifle wasn't working. It was malfunctioning. He didn't want to shoot the rest of the match. I was like, crazy. Shoot my rifle. Right. It's a tool. Have some fun. Enjoy the day. And, you know, we're there to take care of you and make sure you're safe and you have fun. And
Yeah, and that's awesome. And most guys don't forget stuff like that. And so, you know, you'll see him back next time, and he's going to bring a friend. And yeah, that's how we spread it, is by being good, decent people that we are.
Yeah, I remember, you know, my first match. Jeez, I can't even imagine what a goober I was. And JJ and Denise bent over backwards to make me feel okay, right? And now I'm trying to pay it back.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. I mean, that's, you said it perfect. We've all been there. So paying it back is the way to go.
Yep.
Well, that's awesome. So what other types of matches and what other major matches do you have on the schedule for the year, Drew?
Yeah, so this year, I think we start the year off at Superstition Mountain this month, at the end of the month. And so in April, I'm shooting the USPSA Nationals in Las Vegas.
Nice.
And it's the end of the previous month. I think we have the Pikes Peak Shotgun Challenge coming up, which is an awesome match that our buddy Mike Payne puts on, and Mark Passamonic.
Yeah.
And that's what a great match that was last year, and I look forward to going to the second one.
Oh man, that match was so much fun last year. First time I've ever been in a goose blind, and you know, shooting all those aerials and everything over the course of the day, it was just amazing. What such a well run match! The stages kicked so much butt. That was so much fun last year.
Yeah, and I like it because the shotgun's kind of my thing, and so
yeah.
I was lucky enough to finish third in that match, and that's probably my best finish in a pretty major match, and I'm excited to come back and try to improve on my finish this year. So
that's awesome.
After that, I think we have Noveski and Rocky Mountain 3-Gun planned. I'm not going to make He-Man Nationals this year. I'm actually going on vacation to Hawaii with my family.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, I'm bummed because I missed that great match at Raton. But I look forward to Rocky Mountain 3-Gun. And then in October, I'm going to Fallen Brethren. And that's kind of the major matches for the year. I don't think I can pull off any more than that this year. Maybe I'll sneak one in. You know, because we put on our own monthly match every month. Mark Passamonic mm-hmm. puts on a monthly match at Colorado Rifle Club in Byers. And I try to help him set up and do all that. That's another great local match. Mike Dane's having a local shotgun match once a month. So we're, and we have the local pistol match that you can shoot every weekend somewhere here in Colorado. So
yeah,
we have plenty of choices to shoot, and it's a great place to shoot. So.
Yeah, it's an abundance of options, and it's you know, really cool living here in Colorado in this time where you can head north for one day and head east for another day, head south for another day, and you've got a 3-gun match or a tactical shotgun match or shoot even like you said, pistol matches everywhere.
Yeah pretty much hour, depending on where you live, hour and 20 minutes in any direction, and you're at a match. So.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. We're real lucky to be a part of that.
Yeah.
So, Drew, you mentioned that you have Strongside Tactical as a sponsor this year. Are you required to attend certain matches by Strongside, or do you pretty much choose that schedule yourself?
No, I choose that schedule myself. Lee Gray has been really great to me. I shoot the matches. I'm not the best shooter in the world. I believe I represent, the average Joe pretty well. And he was looking for somebody that's a good ambassador for the sport, not the best shooter out in the world. And I was fortunate enough that he thought I was that guy, and I try to live up to that. And he's been great. It's been a great partnership. And I'm working with him again this year, so I'm pretty excited about that.
I was actually fortunate enough to shoot on Lou's squad or vice versa at the Pikes Peak Shotgun Challenge. And, I didn't know that he was your sponsor. I just you know, that's a guy named Lou that I'm shooting with, and what a, you know, genuinely good guy. And then once I put two and two together on you know, your guys' relationship, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a good dude.
It's been great. There's been a couple other guys that have, done some nice things for me. They don't really sponsor me, but they've went out of their way to help me. And Ken Anderson with Nordic Components, and Mark Pasimanek and with Carbon Arms. Both those guys have done some nice things for me, and I appreciate their support, and they've been really good. So they're not really a sponsor, but they've done some nice things for me.
Yeah, that's good. Decent people in the sport. It's just ridiculous how nice everyone is.
Yep. And generous. Yep.
So Drew, if the listeners out there, you know, want to check you out, want to see what you're doing in the sport of three gun and maybe see what your sponsors have to offer, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, I'm kind of I'm kind of a social media guy. I'm on Instagram at Drew Bolt. I'm on Twitter at Colo Drew, Collodrew. I'm on Brian Enos, right? The best shooting forum ever, for pistol and three gun, as, Colo Drew. And, I have a YouTube account under Drew Bolt. So I'm also on Facebook, but I kind of keep that to my, people I really know well, friends and family. But you know, you never know. Try it. Friend me, and maybe I'll friend you back, right?
See if you make the cut.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool. So you're everywhere. I gotta follow you on Twitter. I gotta figure that thing out. I don't understand, but maybe you can show me a few things.
I'm probably the least active on Twitter, right? But you know, it's kind of a lot of work to do all that, and it's not the biggest priority in my life, so.
Understandable. Well, Drew, I got two questions for you, and then we'll say goodbye. Tell me about your most spectacular disqualification.
So there's been I think I've been DQ'd three times, and one thing I've learned is that if you shoot this sport, you will be DQ'd.
Mm-hmm.
Last year at Superstition, I was on a squad with Jerry Michalik, Lena Michalik, and Kay Michalik, and both Kay and Lena were DQ'd in that match.
Right? Really?
Two of the top women shooters in our sport, and they were disqualified. I don't know a shooter that hasn't been disqualified that's been doing it more than a couple years, right?
I know one, but if I tell you, I might jinx him.
Yeah, you?
No, shit, no. I've been disqualified in spectacular fashion, but Greg Jordan actually told me he's never been disqualified and made me knock on wood.
Wow, that's crazy. Good for him. Good for him, right? Probably the most frustrating one. None of them have been egregious. I put a slug on steel at the first year of the Noveski match. Like my
hey,
third,
me too.
My third year, and I got to go home. That stunk. I had a really tumultuous week at work. I'd been in like 8 cities in 4 days. Literally.
Wow.
We were integrating two companies together, and I like flew home, had like zero sleep, loaded my stuff, went to shoot the match, and my head just wasn't in the game. And I put a slug on steel because I just didn't count correctly. Another DQ I had, is a big good a lesson learned. You had to go prone with your pistol, which is pretty rare.
Mm-hmm.
and shoot some targets that were like 50 yards. And when I hit the ground, I was putting my finger into the trigger well, which is a big no-no. And when I hit, the impact of me hitting the ground made me pull the trigger, and I AD'd about 3 feet in front of me into the dirt.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't far enough out that it was considered safe, and so I got DQ'd there. I think there's one more, and I don't remember it. It might have been a 180. The biggest one was probably at Noveski, putting slug on steel. And I, for the life of me, I couldn't figure out how I did it, and I was all the way home, and I was recounting how I loaded my shotgun, and then the light bulb popped on. And I candy caned. It was slugs and birdshot, and I candy caned it. I took the risk, and I miscounted when I loaded it, and I got my hit and went home.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So, you know, I did the exact same thing at the first year of the Noveski match. Slug on steel. James Casanova actually DQ'd me, sent me home. Nicest DQ I've ever gotten, actually.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so live and learn, I guess.
Yep. We've all been there.
That's right.
Except
That's
Greg
right.
Jordan.
You haven't, except Greg Jordan, yes. He's the guy. So, Drew, if you could leave the audience with just one last thought or piece of advice, what would it be?
Yeah, I think don't pull the trigger unless you have a good sight picture.
Also good life advice.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, Drew, thank you very much for joining us on the 3-Gun Show. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you, Dave.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Drew Bolt. Again, you can find the links to Drew's sponsor and everything else we discussed in the interview by heading over to the website and checking out the show notes at 3gunshow.com/episode4. While you're there, look for a link to Drew's Twitter, send him a quick tweet thanking him for being on the show. And if you have a question that you would like answered by a pro 3-gunner, whether it is a gear recommendation, technique, or strategy question, email it to me at dave@3gunshow.com. Be sure to include your name and your city, and you may be featured on the show. Now, I mentioned before the show that I'm doing a prize giveaway. The prize is what I'm calling a 3-gun starter package that consists of a Carbon Armors pinwheel, Blade Tech Revolution double pistol magazine pouch, Blade Tech Revolution AR mag pouch, all with TechLock attachments, and I'm also throwing in four Magpul P-Mags if they're legal in your state. This is over $200 with a high-quality kit. It is stuff I use myself and definitely recommend. The idea here is that if you're a new shooter that has 3 guns and a holster, you'll be able to attach all this good stuff to your belt and go attend a 3-gun match. Now, I want to give a big thanks to James and Mark at Carbon Arms for participating in this giveaway by donating a pinwheel. You guys are awesome. I genuinely mean that. Thank you so much. Now, to get in on this contest, all you have to do is leave a review in iTunes for the 3-Gun Show. And before you hit submit, take a screen capture and email it to me at dave@3gunshow.com. If you include your address, I'll send you one of the super awesome 3-Gun Show stickers as a thank you. For all the details on the prizes and requirements for the giveaway, go to 3gunshow.com/giveaway. Thank you so much for downloading, listening, and subscribing to the show. We'll catch you in the next episode.